Last year, the government announced a digital services tax on US technology firms, including Google, Facebook, and Amazon, to make sure that these global giants with profitable businesses in the UK pay their fair share. Former Chancellor Philip Hammond set out the case for the tax by rehearsing populist themes. The tech firms are big and prosperous, they derive substantial value from operating in the UK, yet they don't pay much tax to Her Majesty's revenue and customs. Opponents of big tech have used Amazon's 25th birthday as an excuse to rehash accusations that the company is underpaying tax. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn's message of many happy tax returns was perhaps the wittiest remark of the lot. But does it show a real grasp of the economics or just a naked attempt to bash big tech to win a few political brownie points? I'm Darren Grimes, and joining me to discuss pressing the delete button on the tech tax is the IEA's Head of Regulatory Affairs, Victoria Hewson, and the IEA's Economics Fellow, Julian Jessop. Hello to both of you. Julian, surely it's entirely justifiable then, and it makes sense for big tech to pay their fair share.
Well, let's deal briefly with Amazon first. I personally don't claim to be an expert on the company's tax affairs, unlike what seems to be like half of Twitter seems to know exactly what tax Amazon should be paying. I frankly suggest if anybody has any evidence that a particular company is underpaying tax, then they should contact Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, who I'm sure would be delighted to hear from them. But I think there are some more sort of general misperceptions in this debate that I think are worth drawing out. For example, you often see unfavourable comparisons made between the sales that a company makes in the UK and the corporation tax it pays here. But that's daft because corporation taxes are paid on profits, not turnover. If you're an online marketplace, and you know, Amazon is an example here, you might see a lot of business transacted between third parties on your website, but your company itself is working on very small profit margins or even potentially at a loss. If you pick another example, when a company only has a limited physical presence in a country, I think it's surely reasonable to expect them to pay less tax in that country. And that's simply because they're not making the same demands on local taxpayer-funded public services or infrastructure as a local company would. So if the reason why a multinational company is paying less tax here isn't based here, then maybe that is a reason for them to pay less tax. I don't necessarily think that's unfair at all.
But truly, if you're a consumer sat at home and you flick through your favourite news blog, whatever that might be, and you find that the EU Commission has found that multinational digital companies pay an average effective tax rate of only 9.5% within the European Union, compared to 23.2% for traditional businesses. I mean, surely you cannot argue that we should squeeze traditional businesses whilst allowing these wealthy tech unicorns that we all use to pay a pittance to the exchequer.
Well, I'm afraid the European Commission numbers are one of the worst examples of what I call policy-based evidence-making that I've seen for many a long year. And those numbers are completely misleading for a number of reasons. First of all, they're not based on the tax affairs of actual companies. They're based on hypothetical business models. If you look at the tax affairs of actual companies, there's plenty of evidence that traditional businesses, particularly national champions like the big car companies or the big banks, actually pay lower rates of tax effectively than the multinational digital companies that we're talking about here. The second point is that even in those stylized models, to the extent that the tech companies are paying less tax, it's because of tax breaks that governments themselves have introduced. Many tech companies benefit from, for example, the favorable tax treatment of research and development, particularly things like software. Or they take advantage of things like employee share option schemes, which are favourably taxed as well. Now those benefits are available to any type of company, whatever business it is in. It might just be that the nature of tech businesses allows those businesses to take more advantage of those taxes. But if that's the reason why those companies are paying less tax, then, well, maybe first of all, it's simply an example of how these tax breaks are actually working, because it's encouraging the sort of activity that governments are trying to promote. But even if that is seen as a problem, then the way to deal with that is to simplify the tax system, get rid of those tax breaks, rather than to add another complication onto the tax system with a new tax on top of all of that.
Well, we've discussed the mountain anger over this, and you know, I how then do you propose that a politician who, you know, is often met, I think, with headlines about how these digital service companies are not paying their fair share. How do you make the case for politicians to instead seek to correct these misunderstandings about the economic burden of taxation instead of reinforcing and exploiting them for short-term political gain?
Well, I hope, of course, I didn't have to explain that. I think that it would be far better if politicians went out of their way to correct these misperceptions rather than, as you say, to exploit
them. I don't
think
we'd have to do this podcast.
Exactly. But I think the way to do it is to focus on the negatives of imposing taxes of this type. As a general rule, it's not actually, of course, companies that pay tax. They're only legal entities. They can't bear the economic burden of taxes themselves. Taxings will be passed on to others. It's possible that, you know, some of it will fall on shareholders who might be richer than the rest of us, and, you know, therefore maybe they should be paying more tax. But some of it will also be passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices or maybe tech companies charging for services for the first time where they're currently free. Some of it will be passed on to employees. You know, people who work for tech companies will be paid less. But there'll be a broader economic cost to the economy as a whole. I mean, the tech sector is often at the cutting edge of productivity improvements. It's delivering major benefits to the quality of our lives. And if the sector is effectively overtaxed because it's paying an additional tax that it shouldn't, then that's bad for activity in that sector, bad for investment, bad for productivity, and bad for the economy as a whole. So even if politicians can't see the moral argument for correcting misperceptions, they should at least be able to see some of the economic and broader social costs that come with a bad tax.
Julian, is there something special about digital businesses that justify this novel tax treatment?
Well, officials both in the UK and in the rest of Europe have come up with a, you know, pretty fancy economic argument here, but one I think also is pretty dubious. What they're basically doing is taking the principle that you should pay taxes on profits in the countries where the value is created and extended that to the activities of consumers who are using internet sites. So the idea is that even if a company like Amazon, for example, is based in the US, UK consumers are creating value for it by going on its website and buying things, or if it's Google, using their search engine, or if it's Facebook, it's posting comments that will then attract advertisers. So the argument is that somehow you should try and get at that value, and that's what the basis of a digital services tax is. It's trying to tax the turnover that's associated with the creation of that value. But the number of problems with that, I mean, first of all, there's a whole host of practical problems in deciding, you know, what is a UK consumer. I mean, if I you know, I'm using Wi-Fi traveling around the world and I'm logging on to Twitter in Hong Kong or something, am I still a UK consumer? You also, of course, have to be able to track the consumer in a way that they may not feel happy with. I mean, after all, there's also supposed to be data protection and all sorts of things preventing us from being tracked. So there's a whole host of practical issues around that. But also, I think the principle is a bit dodgy. I mean, there are loads of businesses, international businesses, that benefit from the contributions of foreign nationals, but who don't necessarily expect to pay tax in the country of those foreign nationals. So, for example, an airline that flies people all around the world isn't generally expected to pay corporation tax in the countries of every single person that happens to fly on their airplane. Or shipping companies that move goods all around the world, they're not necessarily, you know, paying corporation tax in the countries where the goods have come from. So I think it's dangerous there, because there are other companies or industries where you wouldn't expect this to apply. And then, of course, the woolier the definition of online activities are, the, you know, the riskier it is that other businesses get dragged into this. So and one good example is, I mean, suppose you've got a car that's got a very clever, you know, sat nav system that is tracking user data in some way and feeding that back to the car company back home.
Which
they all do, exactly. Is that user created value? And then you've got all sorts of online banking and retail and all sorts of things like that. So I think this is just trying to be too clever. It rather like the policy-based evidence making I suggested earlier. This is trying to find a very fancy economic rationale to justify a policy that you want to do for political reasons, where I think in fact it'd be far better just to leave well alone.
Victoria?
Yeah, it's very convenient, isn't it, that this discovery of a previously unknown source of value creation that allows them to extend this principle that you pay tax where the value is created conveniently allows French and UK and other European governments to hit American successful technology companies with these taxes. And it's really very arbitrary. I think it's fair to say that all businesses benefit from market research and feedback from their market. And as Julian says, lots of physical products like autonomous vehicles and anything really in this connected world with Internet of Things and connected technologies are built on collating user data from around the world as much as possible. And others, of course, are built to the specification of the customer in the first place. So I'm afraid this new conception of information and feedback from digital users that allows technology companies to build their service offering, justifying this different tax treatment, I'm afraid it doesn't wash.
Mm. And Victoria, I've noticed that France, for example, is a country that's really pushing this for big tech companies. And some have actually argued that this is laced in anti-American protectionism. Do you think there's any merit to that argument?
I don't think there's any doubt that that's the case. The French example is extremely interesting because they even call it, the French finance minister himself and officials in the French government have called their version of the tech tax the GAFA tax. GAFA standing for Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon. So there is absolutely no doubt that that is clearly the companies that they were aiming this tax at. The tax in France, similarly, the European Commission's proposal, the UK's proposal, the French proposal are all slightly different. They have their sort of different nuances. But broadly speaking, they are all crafted in such a way as to exclude European technology companies and capture American technology companies. I believe the French government even legislated specifically to exclude the one French company that met the revenue requirement and broadly had the business model that's targeted by this tax. The interesting thing about that, and the French is only the most obvious example because of this colloquial nickname of the GAFA tax, but the UK version is equally vulnerable to this, which is that because it, perhaps by design, but certainly in effect, will impact overwhelmingly on American service providers. It's essentially a tariff on digital services. And that has quite serious implications in trade and WTO terms. For a start, it's a violation of the GATS, the General Agreement on Trade in Services, which provides for what's called the National Treatment Principle, which means that a country has to give the same treatment to foreign service providers as it gives to its own service providers. Now, clearly, a tax that is designed or has the effect of taxing American companies more is going to fall foul of that. Mm-hmm. There's also a WTO sort of commitment that WTO members have entered into not to tax e-commerce. Now, clearly, this is effectively a tariff or a tax on e-commerce transactions. So countries who are implementing these taxes are breaking their own pledges, their own commitments in the WTO. Now, this is all against a backdrop of an increasingly heated trade war, not just between the United States and China, but there's lots of trade sanctions and tariffs being levied between the United States and the EU. So this is clearly problematic for that, and it just gives President Trump even more ammunition when he talks about how unfair the EU treats American businesses. And it's also, frankly, at odds with the EU's own stated commitments in terms of it wants to prioritize digital trade and the e-commerce agenda in the WTO, and it wants to try and crack down on and reduce what's called data localization measures. Well, clearly, these kinds of digital taxes are completely at odds with that.
So if this tax essentially amounts to a tariff and is therefore de facto discrimination against US tech firms, which is actually the Peterson Institute for International Economics has argued this.
Correct.
And I think what you're talking about is the 1998 WTO Declaration on Global Electronic Commerce.
That's right.
Yes. I might be reading this from a piece of paper, not by memory. But I wonder, is that really wise, Victoria, when we're seeking a post-Brexit FTA with the US? And some would argue that maybe this is a reason why we have to stay close to the EU if we want to go after the US tech firms.
Well, US companies have already made very clear in their lobbying and feedback to consultation exercises that the United States trade representative is carrying out about a potential future FTA with the UK. They've already made very clear that they want the US to stand up for them against this digital tax. And the United States has lots of means at its disposal to do that, both in the WTO and also through certain of its own domestic laws that allow it to retaliate against this kind of action that threatens US trade interests. So in terms of our negotiations with the United States for a free trade agreement, this is very high on the list of things that the United States will be saying to get rid of. And frankly, what we want from the United States and what they want from us is to reduce barriers and frictions in our trade. So I think they have a fair case to say, why are you raising this barrier to trade, which hurts our companies, but mainly and above all, as Julian suggests, it hurts our own consumers and our own businesses the most.
And actually, there's been talk of retaliation by applying Philip Hammond's, the former Chancellor's, own justifications. The US could actually tax the global revenues of British luxury car manufacturers, for example, like Rolls-Royce or Jaguar, or British travel agencies like Thomas Cook. I mean,
our banks, we have huge financial services interests in the United States. One of the big issues really with this whole approach to really devising a whole new way of approaching corporate taxation at a global level is that it's starting to really unpick some foundational principles that have operated at global level and in the OECD really for generations.
So Julian, I wonder, we're talking about how bad and how damaging this tax proposal could be. Well, it's not a proposal actually, the UK version's 2020, isn't it, that it comes in?
Yeah, it's legislated already.
Legislated. So what does... It's clearly damaging for UK businesses and consumers, as you've both already very eloquently set out. But how then do we tame these tech giants when most of them are actually now more powerful, arguably, than some nation states?
Well, first of all, I hope it's not too late to stop the introduction of the tech tax. I think the new Chancellor, Satya Javid, hasn't yet.
Have we heard anything? We haven't heard anything on that.
Not as I speak now, no. So there's still time for it to be stopped. I know that during the consultation period, people discussed a large number of very difficult practical issues with implementing it. So even if you thought it was a good idea in principle, I think there's still many practical problems that might cause it to be delayed. Hopefully, of course, stopped altogether. As far as the broader issues of tech companies, I'm sure there are lots of things that we could raise here. I mean, everything from the spreading of fake news through to bad working practices at warehouses and so on, whatever the company might be. The point, though, is that none of these are issues for the tax system. I mean, these are issues for regulation, if appropriate, or for increasing competition, which I think is generally a better way of solving these problems. So putting more power in the hands of consumers and customers more generally, people who advertise, for example, on these sites. I think that is where we should be addressing these problems. Trying to do that through a tax, I think, is an extremely crude and blunt instrument to use. And the costs would far outweigh any conceivable benefits.
Victoria?
Yeah, I would really question whether we really do need to take on the digital giants. I think there's a lot of populist scaremongering going on about the dominance and abuse of market power that these big companies seem to benefit from a competition law perspective. Sort of to echo Julian's previous point, there's a lot of making up law and policy in order to deliver an outcome that you want, rather than applying the law as it stands to these companies and their market share, depending on how you define the market, of course. I would also say all of these measures, whether it's a competition intervention or whether it's a tech tax or whether it's regulatory moves like the GDPR and similar, or the disinformation agenda that the European Commission is pursuing, they usually have the opposite effect of actually shoring up the dominance of the big incumbents by making it really costly to get into those markets and to actually grow and expand. The way these, for example, the tech tax is constructed is that it kicks in after you reach a certain revenue, which clearly incentivizes you not to grow in and surpass that revenue threshold. It also, particularly in the French iteration of it, is targeted really very selectively at very specific activities, which just happen to be the most innovative, efficient way of conducting digital business. So it not only discourages you from growing to pass a certain revenue threshold, it discourages you from using the best novel digital ways of doing business.
Are there any French firms caught up in...
There was one, but they somehow managed to legislate it so that this particular firm was accepted. The one of our colleagues who contributed to the very good Epicenter briefing paper on this subject said the lesson from France seems to be, when you're up against the digital giants, stay dwarves.
Mm-hmm. Well, which is very bad for competition, it's very bad
and completely at odds with the whole idea that the European Union is trying to push national champions and really grow domestic European businesses. I'm afraid this isn't the way to do that at all.
I wonder if, to end, I'll get you both to sum up how, it's not in my gift, but let's say I make you both Chancellor of the Exchequer. And how would you go about reducing existing distortions in the tax system instead of adding new ones like the digital tax? I'll start with you, Julian.
Well, I think we need a fundamental rethink of who we are taxing and why. I mean, in an ideal world, I'd actually like to get rid of corporation tax altogether. I think the purposes of businesses is to make things that people want to buy. It's not to pay tax. Obviously, people involved in those businesses, the shareholders, other stakeholders, should be paying tax. But if you focus on taxing companies, you're taxing economic activity. And corporation tax, I think, widely recognised by tax experts and by public sector economists as one of the worst taxes.
Right. So, Victoria, you're Chancellor of the Exchequer. How do you reduce these existing distortions in the tax system instead of adding new ones like the digital tax?
I would certainly support what Julian has put forward, but I would also add, at the other end of the scale, for small businesses, there is so much complexity. The tax code is full of loopholes and amendments that were invented and patched on to try and close the loopholes, that the complexity is now just ridiculous. And we have small businesses who are struggling with things like the Making Tax Digital program and arbitrary decisions with retroactive effect, like the loan charge scandal. So I would also come at it from the bottom end and really try and alleviate the burdens, both of the actual fiscal burden and the bureaucracy and administration for smaller businesses.
Perfect. Julian and Victoria, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
So what do you at home think? Is it time to delete the tech tax? Or is it the right step in the right direction to tackle these giants? Let us know at IEA London. You can subscribe to this podcast from wherever it is that you get your podcast. For IEA films and reports, head to our website, iea.org.uk. See you next week.